Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here, now joined by my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. This hour is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's up, Drance?
Game two.
Yes, that's right.
Is here. The sun, it is shining. The Oilers have some key players who are game time decisions. Mm-hmm. The Canucks are up 1-0. It's a good day to be a fan of the Coov. Are you watching
the Pat Vancouver? Like, I was like, what?
Oh, man.
Excuse me, buddy?
I'm stunned by how charming I find Pat McAfee's Canucks analysis and, like, the crew.
It reminds me of, like, if our station had to talk about college football.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
We would have no problem with that. Are you kidding
no,
me?
No, but, like, it's like...
I got takes.
I mean, I love college football.
You want to...
I love college football, to
You
want to
know what I think about Quinshon Judkins?
I do not.
You want to know what I think about Jackson Dart?
I'm good.
So I really like Ole Miss players, although Quinshon transferred. Anyway, my point is, at the end of the day, we could talk college football. We wouldn't be, like, interesting.
Yeah.
But at least we'd, like, say the names right and stuff. The Canoves, they seem to call the Canucks. They're, like, kind of mixing
Vancouver and Canucks together.
Well, not Vancouver, but Coov.
Yeah.
It's like the Coov has become sort of a thing on their show, which, like, is not a thing in
not
their
a
life.
Thing. No.
Absolutely not. And now they're mixing it with Canucks. So it's like the Canoves.
In Vancouver.
Is that it?
That's McAfee.
In Vancouver.
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 It sounds like he's doing an accent. It's like, that's not how he talks normally.
Yeah, it's like what a Bond villain would say if they were holding the city ransom.
Yeah.
I also loved one of the like people on the panel or whatever gets so excited about the Canucks winning tonight that they yell, King Slovis reigns again. Presumably in reference to King Seelovs or Shelovs.
Shelovs.
And multiple things annoy me about this, but, like, in a way that I find charming. One is, the guy's name is Artors. If he's a king...
It's King Arthur. Yeah, King Artors.
King Artors. Yeah. Like, come on.
It's right there.
It's right there! And Rick Tocchet's a big round table guy!
Yeah.
The other part of this is Slovis. Okay? Slovis. King Slovis. Caden Slovis is the quarterback at BYU... So they're, like, literally just like, Seelovs, that's kind of like that guy who transferred from USC when Caleb arrived. They're literally just like...
That's what I mean. It's like college football is, like,
they're finding college
into their brain. Yeah.
100%. They're just finding college football guys whose names are sort of similar and being like, yeah, that's who that guy is. Like, I'm really excited for them to refer to JT Miller as Kool-Aid Miller. Like, that's coming.
Oh, it's great. Hey, man. I never thought I'd see the day where the Canucks were, like, a hot topic on the most popular sports talk show in North America right
now. If Ilya Mikheyev ever scores, he is going to be called Ilya Pukanukua. And I'm here for it.
Okay, hold on. I have some business to take care of here before we get to the whiteboard. So we're giving away a 4-pack of tickets to the Rogers Canucks away game viewing party this Sunday, May 12th, for Game 3 at Rogers Arena. You can watch the Canucks take on the Oilers in Edmonton. 6:30 puck drop. The trivia question was, the last time the Canucks played the Oilers in the playoffs was in the second round in 1992.
Sorry, the Oilers played Vancouver?
Yes, correct, of course. Excuse me. Who did the Canucks beat in the first round that year? The answer, of course, is, as I believe we've discussed on this show, the Winnipeg Jets. Shout out to Ken in West Van, among many, many other people getting the correct answer.
Ken in West Vancouver.
In West Vancouver, yeah, gets the win.
Hangovers everywhere in Coover tonight?
Coover tonight!
Coover.
Guy doesn't know that last call in the city is like 11 p.m.
Yeah.
And we all have to get up to hike. Hangovers? What?
So shout out to Ken in West Van. And by the way, in that Jets series, the Canucks were down 3-1.
Hangover, sir? I'm in yoga pants.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
The Canucks were down 3-1 in that series. They win three straight to win it, 8-2, 8-3, 5-0. So they put the boots to the Winnipeg Jets after falling down 3-1 in that series.
You guys got to try and get one of those McAfee guys on for a hit. Text in an unsigned texter. I want AJ Hawk. I want AJ Hawk, and we need to do the video and just have him say nothing.
And have him just stone faced.
And have him just do the AJ Hawk thing, like occasionally looking at his cigar. That would be amazing.
Just occasionally like shake, nodding his head or whatever. Yeah. We got to find an AJ Hawk for our show.
Well, like,
just a guy to sit right here in the middle between us. Stone faced.
I'm telling you right now, Dom is up to the task.
Dom can absolutely do less.
We just need him to commit to working 5 days a week. No, I mean, honestly, though, if we get one of those guys on, I'm just going to be like, say Vancouver. Just say it. Vancouver.
All right.
Can we get the drop just one more time? Just for me.
Hangovers everywhere in Coover tonight?
Coover tonight. Unbelievable.
Hangovers everywhere in Coover tonight? Oh, man. Very, very good. All right. We'll see if we can fit that in a little bit more later on in the show. But we got a lot to get into. So let's open the whiteboard here.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, May 10th. I don't know why I say open the whiteboard as if it's like a bag we're opening up. I could say like begin or start the whiteboard. Let's
look
do the whiteboard.
Glance at.
Yeah. Let's go to the whiteboard.
Yeah.
I'll mix it up. I'll
get
fine. Better.
Don't you worry. Know what? I haven't hated it.
Yeah, thank you.
And
wow.
You know I would have
high
told.
Praise.
You know I would have told you.
Absolutely.
on air.
Starting with the headlines, game two tonight between the Canucks and the Oilers. Canucks have a chance to go up 2-0
in this
series.
And where's the game being played?
Rogers Arena.
In?
Vancouver.
Vancouver!
The Couve.
All right.
Big game in the Couve. Hockey night in the Couve.
Hockey night in the Couve. Oh, God. I hate it so much.
All right. So, that's obviously the number one headline. And as I said off the top of the show, look, we know what a 2-0 series lead doesn't mean in this city, of course. But it still means a lot, right? And especially, I think, as dramatic as that and incredible and stunning and fun as that game one win was, if Edmonton gets the win tonight, it's pretty easy to say, like, hey, we got the split. And that's all the road team is ever trying to do in the first two games, right? Get the split, go back to your home ice with home ice advantage. Conversely, the Canucks have a chance to really, really take control and I think continue to build that doubt to I think they've already planted the seeds of doubt, but I guess to like, you know, fertilize them and water them and nurture those seeds of doubt in the Oilers' minds, that would be six straight losses against the Canucks this year. So massive, obviously, in terms of the leverage in the series. I think massive from a psychological perspective as well. Don't give Edmonton a chance to flush that game one. Don't give them a chance to forget about it and find their footing in the series. Keep them on the back foot. Don't let them get off the mat.
So just some historical data, okay? The home team has won to go up 2-0 in a series on 262 occasions previously.
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, that's incorrect. Excuse me. Let me fact check that. It's happened 296 times.
Okay.
And they've gone on to win 262 times. That's 88%.
It's really good.
It's a very high conversion rate. Now, of course,
We know what one of 20, them was.
Yep. And we don't have to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to do anyone dirty in the Couve tonight. But that's a big swing. Now, the opposite side of this is if the road team wins to level the series 1-1, that's happened 179 times, 86 times the away team has gone on to win the series. So you're talking about a 52%. Canucks would be at 52% based on historical data to win. If they lose tonight, they'd be at 88% if they win. Now, we know that the odds aren't really like that, right? We know that there are situations where one team is so good that you can just kind of throw the historical data out. Mm-hmm. The Dallas Stars, 25-1 to win the Stanley Cup just about 10 days ago, as I will bring up incessantly for the rest of my lifetime, are an example. They storm back after dropping the first two against Vegas. Edmonton has that ceiling case, although, I mean, if Leon Draisaitl doesn't play tonight,
do they then? Yeah.
And he's a game time decision. You know, their path does get somewhat narrower. They still have the ceiling case to win three in a row, win four in a row. Like this Oilers team can be, when they're on their game, an absolute buzzsaw. So this is a dangerous opponent. There's no question about it. and we're not sort of taking these historical numbers to the bank, but this is a huge swing.
Yeah.
The Canucks, with their Houdini act in game one, right, have given themselves an opportunity to turn the screw here, to like really put Edmonton in a tough, tough spot heading back for game three in front of a Rogers Place crowd that I guarantee you is going to feel pretty nervous.
Yep.
Especially if you're, you know, the Oilers are down 2-0 and the Canucks can score first. I mean, what does that do to the energy in the building? What, how, this series now feels like it's on a knife's edge for the Oilers, and that it's awfully early for us to be saying that about a team that entered, you know, as heavily favored as they were.
And a part of that is, and I'll bump this up to headlines, of course, as you alluded to, I've mentioned a couple times on the show, but Leon Draisaitl as a game time decision. That's per Mark Spector, who's relaying it from Leon Draisaitl himself. I'm a little surprised to hear even that much level of uncertainty. Part of that is, you know, playoff smoke screens and all of that. You always want to leave that uncertainty with the opponent if you can. But, I mean, that's not a lineup note, right? That's a potential headline item in this series. The health and the status of Leon Draisaitl, whether he'll be in the lineup tonight, and if not, how good is he? Or sorry, if he is, how good is he? How effective is he? What if anything, do the Oilers feel they have to do to kind of mitigate the decline in his effectiveness?
One, can he play center? Mm-hmm. Can he drive a line at center? Because this is part of, you know, this is such a multifaceted issue from an Oilers perspective, right? Can Draisaitl play, right? Because even if he's a DH who can, like, pitch in on the power play,
yep,
there's real
still
value there.
Mm-hmm.
Real value there for the Edmonton Oilers, right? So, can he play? B, where can he play? How much can he play? Are you talking fourth line minutes, 5-on-5 with power play usage? Are you talking can take a regular shift but maybe can't drive play at center? In which case, maybe he plays the wing with McDavid, or at mm-hmm. least cycles through the wing with McDavid. Can he play center but not drive play? I mean, there's so many different gradients that will impact the series. And here's the key one. Draisaitl versus the Lindholm line was like a pretty set second game one matchup. Canucks won that matchup. And what Draisaitl playing center allows, from an Edmonton perspective, is it allows the Oilers to protect the Nurse-CeCe pair with one of their best play drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Nurse-CeCe pair, which struggled so mightily in game one, tenable? Is it tenable in a world where,
if you don't have like the shield of Draisaitl to go along with it?
Where Draisaitl's not around.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention what it does to the rest of your lineup if you have to move RNH to center and, you know, Adam Henrique jumping in or Fogle jumping into the top six. Do you ultimately need to like bump Ryan McLeod up just to stem the bleeding, further weakening your bottom six, which was already an edge for Vancouver?
Which already getting dominated by the Pettersson line territorially.
Yeah. So, and then what's funny about all of this, what's funny about this entire discussion, right, is, you know, it's like in Game of Thrones, how there's like the petty squabbles of the noble houses. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. a zombie army is amassing in the north. And it's like, none of this matters.
It's also because of Connor McDavid.
Connor McDavid yeah. is the others. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can talk about, or what about the Nurse-CeCe pair all we want, and then Connor McDavid come out and have 5 points. And you know, fundamentally, like, why are we worrying about Edmonton's troop movements when they have a nuke, right? At the end of the day, if the nuke goes off tonight, there's going to be a mushroom cloud. And that's sort of the question, the like line A, and we can't ignore it, even though we've talked about all this other stuff, including whether or not another one of the 5 best hockey playing humans on the planet will play, and it still sort of pales in comparison in importance to McDavid, and whether or not he can break through at a far greater clip than he did in game one.
There's no question that Edmonton can win like that, obviously, with Edmonton or with McDavid going nuke, right, and almost single-handedly winning a game. I guess the question is, can they do that 4 times in 6 games, right? Like that,
yep.
And that's where the Canucks' edge is. Will he do it once or twice in this series? Would not shock me at all, right? Would not shock me at all. But if that's their only way to win, or like their only surefire way to win, that tips things in the Canucks' favor. And I think that's, you know, look, man, if you're able to get another one where he doesn't go off, then right, then you're looking at, okay, does he have to do it 4 times in the next 5 games, right? So this is a huge high stakes game here for the Canucks, and especially given Leon Draisaitl's status. Do we want to talk Kelly Sutherland quickly?
Yeah, I mean, we should.
Yeah,
we should, just because fans are talking about it. Rick Tocchet's talking about it. So it matters. There's a long history with Kelly Sutherland and this franchise stemming back to 2011, 2013, 2013 in particular. Do I have that right?
What, 2013?
2013 is the Sharks suite?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was a tough one. You know, there's obviously a lack of trust between the fan base and a local referee, right? Like Kelly Sutherland's a Richmond, British Columbia guy and consistently rated as one of the NHL's best refs. And yet there is a sense that when Kelly Sutherland's been in the game, it's been tough for the Canucks to win. The record in the last eight games, 0-7-1, has been going around social media. Rick Tocchet noted that he saw it while discussing the topic with the media today and said he didn't care and has a good relationship with Kelly. Okay, I mean, whatever. Like, I'll tell you this much, because we did the anonymous player polls for The Athletic this year, and I was talking to some Canucks players and asked them who their favorite referee was, and Kelly Sutherland's name actually got dropped by a couple current Canucks players who obviously didn't know the long sort of history of Sutherland's relationship with the fan base. You know, I sort of briefed them on it, and, you know, they were kind of unmoved. They were like, nah, he's a good ref. Like, we like him. So I know it's a talking point outside the club. It probably should be. You know, I mean, there were definitely the Marchand speed bag thing and then the Daniel Sedin boarding call and unsportsmanlike penalty at the end of the series when the Canucks got swept by a Sharks team that, like, feasted on the power play and drew a lot of calls with embellishment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get it. Like, I completely understand why that ancient frustration permeates. Like, that's what this market is. We have long memories.
And also, like,
we care.
The Brad Marchand Daniel Sedin thing is a travesty of refereeing. It's just idiotic on its face. So I get why that would linger.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, he kicked Daniel Sedin out of the game.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like, what are you doing? Now, I'm not saying that makes him then, you know, incapable of reffing a Canucks game or anything like
impartially.
That.
Impartially.
Yeah, no, I understand why, like, it lingers. That was a farce.
It's a gap in trust.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, already exists with the NHL and almost every fan base when it comes to the arbitrary way that officiating can be handled. There are elements that I legitimately understand and think people whine about because they like to whine about the officiating. And there are elements of NHL officiating that, like, genuinely frustrate me.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, I liked the flow of game one. Like, I thought the referees called what absolutely needed to be called and mostly let both teams play.
Yep.
I thought there were some borderline hits both ways, but because they were being uncalled both ways and no one except, you know, Dreisaitl, but it doesn't seem like it was as a result of a bad hit, was, like, unfairly penalized in my view. Like, at the end of the day, if people aren't getting injured and the standard is consistent, I don't have a huge issue with that. In fact, the only bad call in my view was when they didn't call Pugh Suter for literally, like, throwing a downfield pass with the puck out of the Canucks end. That was the only missed call, and that benefited Vancouver. I don't think there's any. Shouldn't be a hot take to say the officiating in game one benefited Vancouver, right?
Sure. I mean, whatever. It was fine. Now, even
it was
before
fine. It wasn't an injustice either way.
Yeah. Even before the Kelly Sutherland thing, I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a bit of a special teams battle tonight, just because I was surprised there were only three power play opportunities total in game one. As we've talked about so much, right? Frequently, that's not the case early in a playoff series. The NHL likes to call a lot of playoffs or penalties early in a playoff series. So I was kind of wondering, do we see a correction anyways from the NHL? Who knows? Maybe that's not going to be this series. Maybe they will maintain the standard from game one. I hope they do, because it was good. It was awesome. But we'll see. And again, obviously, the more penalties, the better for Edmonton.
Fundamentally, I also thought the officiating in the Nashville series, like, I liked it because the only thing it felt like they called really harshly were penalties that negated scoring chances. And that's what I want. Like, I don't want a rush of special teams play, but I do think if you're inhibiting the skilled players from making the difference, I want to see those called more often than not. I thought the Nashville series had a pretty good standard for the most part. I liked game one. We'll see what game two looks like. Fundamentally, the Sutherland story is just one of, like, a breakdown in trust between a fan base and a specific referee who also serves as a stand-in for wider skepticism about NHL refereeing generally. Some of which I actually think is over-the-top whining, and some of which I think is clearly fair given how arbitrary it can be on a game-to-game basis. So that's my take.
We'll skip over the broadsheet for today. Lineup notes, the big one, obviously. And there was, I think, it was fair to have some questions about which way this would go. Artur Shelov starting in net for the Vancouver Canucks. Again, despite, you know, allowing those four goals, maybe not having his strongest performance in game one, he gets the nod from Rick Tocchet.
King Silvos reigns again.
King Slovis.
What did I say?
Silvos.
Oh, whatever.
That's another good one.
I knew that they got it wrong. Sorry, what is it again?
Slovis.
Slovis. King yeah. Slovis. Okay, so, yeah, I'm no surprise, right? I thought Tocchet's commentary that Shelov's has earned this, that carried a lot of weight with me when I heard it yesterday. I thought, yeah, okay, well, then he's going to start while he's winning. Even if his game did look a little off, in my opinion, in game one, they're going to need him to be better tonight, frankly. I shouldn't be a hot take.
Mm-hmm.
All that said, he's 3-1 in four starts here, right? Like, they're not here without Shelov's, right? They're probably, they would have played a game seven against Nashville on Sunday, and who knows if he wasn't up to the task. He has been, and when it comes to goaltenders, you know, there were some things with Shelov's footwork, post-integrations, tracking, that I thought looked below his standard in game one, and yet there's only one metric by which we're going to judge a goaltender at this time of year, and it's wins. So, guy's playing great.
And obviously, there's just a level of confidence from Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff and the organization in what Shelov's can do, right? Like, I think if there was any doubt, like, uh-oh, is that going to carry over, I think they'd go to the Smith here. But they obviously trust Shelov's a ton.
Well, and Shelov's is Clark's guy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, part of the dynamic here, like, management had to Smith in Pittsburgh. They wanted to bolster their goaltending depth, but and I think DeSmith's like won over. Like, I'm not saying there's any touchiness in that relationship, but like Clark has handpicked Shelov's in 2019 in conjunction with the Canucks scouting staff. Wanted him desperately. Was like texting the draft floor table every round, trying to encourage them to not leave it to chance and let Shelov's go late. You know, this is a goaltender that Canucks goalie coach Ian Clark just believes in fundamentally. And I think that's where a lot of this, like, that carries a lot of weight in shaping the club's decisions mm-hmm. on these matters.
Ian Clark, one of the key members of the roundtable making the goaltending decisions.
Indeed.
Big roundtable guy. Okay, we'll skip the playoff forecast. Obviously, no change for this series based on after game one.
Well, I do just think Adam Henrique, Leon Draisaitl.
Oh yeah, game time decisions.
Our game time decisions looks like no changes in the Canucks lineup.
And it looked based on practice yesterday. I haven't seen any information from the game day skate, but that Adam Henrique probably wouldn't figure. That was kind of the takeaway, I think, as at least per Mark Spector. So game time decision, as we said yesterday, probably leaning more towards doubtful than likely to get in or questionable. But we'll see. You never know.
And Sam Carrick will take warm ups in case either Draisaitl or Henrique are in fact out. So the Draisaitl one looms so large here, and frankly so does the Henrique one. Honestly, like he's a partial answer to some of their questions. If Draisaitl can't go, if both guys are out, man, it's, you know, it just, this path keeps narrowing. The Oilers, like, cutting edge becomes duller sort of with every additional mounting absence that crops up in this series.
Okay, betting odds for us tonight.
Okay, so a shocking amount of the handle is on the Edmonton Oilers tonight. Like, I saw some BetMGM data that 90% of the handle was on the Oilers. Woo!
Well, they're the heavy favorite going into the series. They have Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid had a rare, not impactful game in game one. If you're an outside observer, you're going to talk yourself into Connor McDavid's going to try to steal the show tonight. Like, Connor McDavid is going to have a huge say in this, and if that's the case, then you like the Oilers' chances. So I understand that perspective.
Yeah. So this is per data and PR exec John Ewing, who works for BetMGM. He had the Oilers opened at -140, right? They're at -130 now to win. So they're road favorites against the Canucks in game two. 73% of bets and 92% of the handle are on the Oilers per
wow.
John Ewing at BetMGM. The open, the total opened at 6.5. It's now down to 6. I guess that's a partial reaction to Leon Draisaitl's status. 88% of bets and 93% of the handle on the over, which nonetheless is moving down.
Yeah.
So that's weird, right? Like, the fact that so much of the handle is on the Oilers and so much of the handle is on the under and yet the or on the over and yet the lines are moving against market, that's like odd to me. Doesn't really track. Anyway, so that's sort of where we stand here in terms of the Canucks and the Oilers game tonight. Oilers aren't just favored on the road, but overwhelming amount of the handle. It should be noted, by the way, that the Sutherland line act, the Sutherland announcement actually moved the line. The line opened at minus 140, got down to about minus 125, and then moved to minus 130 in the wake of the referee announcement, which is hilarious.
It's very funny.
Like, properly funny.
It's very, very funny.
Without question. Just overall series odds here. The Canucks are down to minus 135 to advance. That's a, I mean, given that they opened, given where they opened, that's both the game one result and the
Draisaitl uncertainty.
Draisaitl, yeah. So the Canucks, the Canucks are plus 115 to win, So that's a 46.5% implied probability, a complete game changer for Vancouver. I also just wanted to bring up this stat to you because I found it interesting.
Okay, we got to go quick though. We got a guest on the other side.
Okay, sorry. I saw Jason Gregor had a stat about how often teams cough up a lead the way that they did. So 56 times, I think, or 66 times in the playoffs, a team has coughed up a three-goal lead and lost in a playoff round.
Mm-hmm.
And only 15 times, only on 15 occasions, has that team still managed to win the series.
Wow. That's interesting. That's really fascinating. Yeah. We talk about like psychological edges in this series.
I just wanted to bring it up because missed opportunities, you know, the impact of them, it feels magnified and mounts as the series goes along.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today. Playoff game day here. Mark Crawford, former Canucks head coach, joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.